Hello, everybody, and welcome to the GMS Magazine podcast. I am Paco Garcia.
And I'm Sean Harris, also known as RVC Bar.
And we are the coolest people in the RPG industry talking about RPG stuff all the time, which is very good because I know that you kind of enjoy these things, listeners and viewers, which is very much appreciated. Thank you. Thank you very much for being there. Anyway, I'm not going to grumble much longer because we're going to continue with the topic that we started last week. And as you can tell, my mind is a little bit on the funny side today already. So don't expect much from me. Anyway, last week we started talking, Sean, about your experience as a black player of role-playing games, and we went through a lot of your experiences, and we kind of ended up on a really tough note because it really went down on how brutal it is when all of a sudden you realize that some writers, some authors actually think of people of color as lesser than white folk. What I can't really remember is whether how much we discussed about how did you move on from that?
So to recap for those who may not recall what we talked about last time, I shared some passages from Decipher Games' Lord of the Rings RPG. And one of the things that I highlighted was that in that role-playing game, taking a token as spin on things, I'll try to be charitable and say in their attempt to be to evoke Tolkien's language and Tolkien's setting, they presented white people as noble and brave and strong and smart and also good looking. And the people of color, like the people who would be considered Asian or black or Arab or what have you, were presented as innately stronger and tougher, but stupid. And this is actually represented mechanically. They were not only, stronger and tougher, but dumber. They were also in league with, the ultimate evil. And, so there's the connotation of people like me being innately morally inferior. And I share how it kind of blindsided me when I saw it, and then I had to and I had to make a choice, and I had to play. At the time when I was with the GM, and this is to answer Paco's question today, at the time with the GM, I showed it to the GM, and he's like, yeah, I know. Black people are just dumber in this game. And I think if I were presented with the same situation today, I'm like, can we house rule this shit? But at the time, it was like, I was eager to play. I loved the Lord of the Rings films. And I guess I swallowed I decided not to make a stink about it. Even though it sucked to encounter that. And I guess in retrospect, it was kind of like swallowing poison. So I just swallowed that because, I wanted to play, and there was a group of people whom I liked playing with, and the GM was pretty good. But the GM was, a cool guy who was somebody I could talk to about these issues or whatnot. So it's like, it was either that or not play. And this is before my stance where I said I'd rather not play than have to play with that shit. So I just, I hate to say it like this, I just sucked it up and dealt and just did it because it was that or not play.
But you know, that I reckon is, I mean, that obviously I don't want to step on your experience, but I get the feeling that that is something that people of color have to do an awful lot of times within the RPG sphere, whether it is as artists or as players or as GMs or just as consumers. Mm-hmm. I just get the feeling that that is something that is expected of yes. you by an awful lot of people. You know, an awful lot yeah. of people say things like, man up and get over it, or it's not that bad, or it's just a game. But is it?
No. No, not really. I mean, because if you think about it, there are people in the real world who think that.
But that's, yes. I mean, and that's the thing, that we hear that all the time. Whenever somebody makes any kind of, in very big brackets, joke, because I do not take jokes with any kind of racial content, you know, racist content, as, oh, it's just a joke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's 99% white people who demand that people of color put up with it because they find it amusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How maddening is that? I mean, I think about that and I go completely bananas. What is it like for you to leave that kind of situations?
It hurts. I mean, I could try to be, you know, sophisticated and intelligent and give you a very well thought out processed answer, but frankly, it hurts. That my humanity means so little.
As you know, last week I ended up in tears, and this is just as painful for me to hear this, because I find it so incredibly unfair and unnecessary, you know, that some people's humor, I wish I could, you know, draw brackets in audio for people to understand how much in bracket I say humor here is worth more than the pain you have to go through every time you hear something like that. You know, and the fact that they don't even allow you to defend it, to ask for that sort of crap to stop.
Mm.
Has the situation improved since you encountered that game 18 years ago? It's not that long ago.
Yeah, I would say yes, in certain spaces. It's like especially now that since most of my gaming is online, there are a couple of things that changed. I joined a more racially balanced group, even though the gender was all out of whack. It was like me and a black player and two white players. So it was a lot. So, you know, that same crap isn't going to fly.
Mm.
But also, especially online, I can curate my gaming circles a lot more. So I can look for other gamers of color. I can look for other black gamers. I can put out a call for, you know, a more diverse group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, just stuck with whatever's locally available. And so I guess it's, I say my experience has improved, but that's because I took deliberate steps to improve it.
So it feels like there are better spaces as long as you're prepared to make them, mm-hmm. but not because the society that conforms role players has actually improved that much. Is that, would that assessment be accurate?
I think so, yeah. It's like I either had to create that space or like really go looking for it. So yes, I'd say that's true.
Is that a reflection on, I'm not going to say American society as a whole, because I know that that is a very big country and you are in a particular place. So I'm just going to ask, do you think that is a reflection of the society where you live?
I don't know. I mean, probably, but American society in general is very segregated. Mm-hmm. So, it's like, yeah, we pretend otherwise, big melting pot, blah, blah, blah. But with the exception of a few major metropolitan areas, well, even in the segregation, it's like people don't have, I say segregation as if it's mutual, but it's not. It's the fact of the matter is a lot of people of color have white friends, but most white people don't have friends of color.
Mm. Okay.
And the way we define friends is very different, by the way. I mean, when people of color talk about white friends, they're not talking about that white person they go to work with and know, you know, their first and last name. You know, they're talking about actual people they have a bond with, you know, a close bond with. But when white people talk about their black friends or their Asian friends or something, they're just talking about somebody whose name they know. And that's not the same.
No.
And before, like, anybody gets, you know, the hackles raised about it. Yeah, I know you are different. You are special. I get it. But by and large, I mean, it's been proven statistically. It's like by and large, it's just there's no real intimacy in those relationships. It's mostly transactional. So you're dealing with somebody you work with or you know, in a situation where one person has more power than the other one or whatever. It's not, you know, there's not this that real bond that defines a true friendship. Yeah, and what true friendship means to me is that you can get mad at each other, then still love each other and come back.
Yeah. So it's more the kind of people that you have a beer with after the gym, and then you don't see them again until next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't call that friendship either. I mean, that's just acquaintanceship. If it gets that mm-hmm. much also. So no. Now we also talked about last week how white folk see the black experience as a monolithic thing. Are you in contact with other black players, and do you know if their experience is similar to yours?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, plenty. But and it's like there are similarities and differences. I mean, like quite like especially because I connect with them through my experience in New York. Like New York is its own ecosystem. Mm. So, you know, so of course the experiences are going to be very different. And me, like living in the South, and then that's a very different thing too. It's just, and also like when you account for things like colorism,
mm-hmm.
Light skinned gamers are going to have a different experience from dark skinned gamers. Just as, you know, and then that's before you even account for things like queerness or class or, you know, and gender in general. So it's like my experience as a black woman is going to be markedly different from a black male gamer's experience. I think I said that last time, but
yeah,
it's, you know, but the thing is, I think what's interesting is that among ourselves, black gamers are much better at acknowledging those differences. I mean, but I guess that's true in general, where it's like, you know, within the group, it's understood that there are a wild variety of perspectives and experiences that, you know, because everybody's different. And they come at it from a different place. And like I was explaining, like in a fandom situation, it's like people's thresholds are different based on that. So, so to me, it's sort of, and it's just like the same thing when I said, I went to an HBCU And for those who don't know what an HBCU is, it's a historically black college or university. And when you're in that environment, when you're surrounded by black people, you start to see those nuances. You start to see that sheer variety, you know, and you start, I mean, of course, I always thought black people were people, but like, there's nothing like that environment to disabuse you of the notion that black people are all alike. You know, it's like, there's nothing like it. You can ask like the five white people who went to the school I went to. So it's just, it's, I don't know, to me it's a given, but apparently it's not in the public discourse.
Have you seen that reflected in the way that people treat you within the RPG community?
Somewhat. It's like, again, it's sort of like, for instance, well, it's like, it's kind of funny because it's like, on the one hand, I'm often the only black player around, but sometimes there's another black player around, and there's this weird, I don't want to say triangulation, but it's a kind of weird thing where people kind of project this sort of good Negro, bad Negro thing. I don't know how to explain it. Where the one that is more acquiescent is more, you know, more acquiescent, more inclined to go with the flow and not make a stink about things is as the nice one. And the one who's more likely to say, hey, I'm not cool with this, or be critical, or speak up when something is wrong, is seen as the mean one, regardless of what's actually being said.
Okay.
So it's almost as if non-black gamers, it's like a narrative they want to project onto us. It's like, it's hard to describe, but it's definitely there.
I'm getting some vibes. You know, what you're explaining to me, I'm getting some vibes about the invisibility. You know, it's okay for you to be there as long as you are compliant with what we put onto you, but don't be too black on us.
Yeah,
you know, just be, just act as if you were white. So don't act black. Don't tell me that I'm doing anything wrong. Just get on with things the way I'm doing them, because otherwise it's uncomfortable for me. Is that sort of the vibe I'm getting?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Which is quite interesting, because is the sort of thing that I complain very often within the LGBTQIA world, and is that how an awful lot of people say, oh no, we are very tolerant, we're, you know, we welcome anybody around the table, but as soon as we say, hey, don't use the F word near me, thank you very much, oh, you see, you now, you can't take it, why do you have to be so gay, get your agenda, so on and so forth, so be like, okay, so you are okay with me being gay as long as I put up with your shit. It's doesn't work like that, though, does it? It's, come on.
No, it's exactly like that, I think. We accept everybody at the table until I raise the issue of race, not with me personally, but in the fiction of the game. Okay, like, it was like, yeah, you can be black and you can like play with us, but. Why does your character have to have this thing with police brutality? Or why does your character have to have this connection to slavery? You know, why are you bringing that up? And it's like,
hello.
Because I think it'd be interesting to explore.
Yeah.
And that's like, now my only thing was like, the group I was with was not the group to really explore that with. I don't think they had the range. In retrospect, they didn't have the range. And it's like, if I had other black players present to explain that to me, I think I would have come away with a lot less bitterness from the experience. But yeah, it's just.
But the thing is, and you know, maybe this is where I ask a stupid question, but why would you have to put up with it because they're stupid? I mean, you know, because they don't have the range or because they're ignorant. How does that work?
Yeah, okay. Well, it's like we were discussing in one of our earlier episodes where it's like when you're dealing with like very traumatic history,
mm-hmm.
it takes a certain environment to make that not go badly. And if the players are just there to have fun or, you know, just there to have fun, beer and pretzels kind of thing, it's like that's not the environment you want to bring, you know, your deep intergenerational trauma to. It's like it takes a certain amount of judgment to be able to broach such topics. Like nowadays, now it'd be different if like the game itself was about that. There is a game about slavery. I think it was Steal Away Jordan. And, you know, that's one thing where it's like, okay, I know what this is about. I kind of sign up for it and I'm psychologically prepared. And this group is psychologically prepared and understands that this can get real sensitive. So mind yourself.
Hmm.
That's a different situation where I go into this majority white environment with a bunch of people who are clearly not well versed in critical race theory, clearly not well versed in African American history, and so and then try to inject an exploration of the legacy of slavery. Yeah, it's not going to go well. It's just not going to go well. You know, and you hate to think it, but it's like shrug. You know, fine. It's like in retrospect, it's like, yeah, I'll reserve that character concept for another group. Yeah.
But it's quite telling, though, because let's face it, if they cannot face that sort of content and discussion around, you know, a situational mm-hmm. scenario, mm-hmm. how are they going to deal with that in real life?
I have no idea. I think, honestly, if I'm going to be... It's like, I've been very charitable. You notice me trying to be very charitable, but here I'm going to, like, just drop that nonsense and say they don't.
Because that's my worry, really, that if they're not prepared to even contemplate the fantasy, you know, of exploring this as in a... Then what's going to happen when you tell them in real life, hey, don't use the N-word in front of me, mate?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, maybe somebody just needs to get punched a couple of times. Sometimes it's like, I'm not saying I advocate violence or anything like that. Don't get it twisted, dear listener. It's just, I feel like, especially now, I think a lot more Black people are tired of playing nice about this kind of shit. And especially with Nazis in the White House and all that. Like, you know what? No more. You come out your mouth with something really messed up. I'm just, it's like, you know better. And it's not debatable. You know, people just going to have to get decked a few times. Mm. Some people are going to just got to get knocked out. And like I said, I do not advocate violence. I'm not even saying I would do that. It's just we've tried the moral high ground. We've tried educating. We tried civil debate. It's just like, you know what? It's time to just knock motherfuckers out. Just because it's just I think a lot more Black people are just frankly sick of it. And I know it's like. Now, me, I'm a bit more easygoing in the sense of, like, I'm not... I know we talked a lot about race and white people, like, the past couple of episodes, but y'all listening, white people don't take up that much of my... Don't take up that much space in my head rent-free. My general thing is not... You know, I don't go around hating white people because that requires too much energy, too much effort, and white people in general do not matter that much to me. And, you know, so it's more like my problem is not white people as white people. It's the bullshit that I have to deal with because of it. So, you know, I just want to play a role-playing game. But, oh, no, I can't do that because white people own that bullshit and making it so I have to, like... So instead of just playing the game and playing this character or whatever, it's great. Now I have to deal with this bullshit. It's like in Lovecraft Country, you know, because we talked about this. It's like in Lovecraft Country when Ruby's talking about how she's always interrupted. It's the same thing. It's like, I just want to play the game, but you keep interrupting with the bullshit. Mm. And that's the part I have the problem with. I'm more frustrated and annoyed. I don't hate y'all. Y'all just get on my damn nerves.
I think the issue is that they want you to play a white people's game.
Yeah.
They want you to play a game. They want you to play a white people's game.
Yeah.
Where you do what white people like seeing and what white people like hearing, which is like, no, that's not how it works. You know, why, you know, again, going back to the same topic, it's like, why do I have to leave aside topics that matter to me just because they don't matter to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your escapism is not my escapism. Why can't you play in a world without racism so you can escape from the racism in this world?
Right.
You know, why do you have to perpetuate that in gaming just because, oh no, this is, you know, that's how it plays.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah. That shit, in a sake.
Yeah, and it's like, it's like, and I know it's kind of hard for us Americans to imagine it because, like we talked about like so many episodes ago, it's like for an industry that's built on imagination, we just show very little of it a lot of times. And part of that is like with imagine a world without racism. And it's like, they can't help themselves. It's like they have to put it in there. And it's like, no, you don't understand. I want the whole idea of biological races to be kind of like, or the whole idea of those kinds of humanoids are always in conflict with those kind of humanoids. And I'm like, eh. And it's like, I want to escape to where I can play someone who looks like me. And it's not a thing. And it's not a big deal. Like, where it's like, well, you can't play someone who looks like you because for some odd reason, there's no Africa analog in the world, in the game world. Or you can't play someone who looks like you because everybody would hate you on sight. I'm like, why? It's like... You know, it's like always the argument that we bring up when we're in the group. It's like, okay, you have elves, wizards, and dragons, and the human with brown skin is the problem. You know, the human with brown skin is gonna make people go, ooh. I'm like, yeah, nah.
You know, once, and to be honest, I didn't realize at the time how bad this was. But I remember playing an AD&D game in the mid-90s. Mm. And I remember playing, for some reason, I wanted to play a brown character.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play it at the end because the game didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of my friends saying, you can, but... You when you go to a city, people are not going to know where you come from. You can tell them that you've been cursed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was kind of thing. And the thing is, at the time, you know, I'm talking, what was it, really stupid, early 20s year old man. And I where I grew up, we didn't have a clue, quite frankly. And I grew up in an incredibly racist environment, but toward different people. So I just didn't make anything of it. And I'm just thinking about it now. I'm thinking, God, how many of these situations and circumstances must have gone on at different tables where the color of the skin has been seen as a curse or something that you have to justify in a magic way kind of thing.
I'll take it further and add another layer of fucked up to this. I don't know if you've heard of the Curse of Ham.
Not by the name. What is it?
Okay, in the Bible, after Noah and the flood, and they finally get to land or whatever, Noah gets drunk, and one of his sons, Ham, kind of does something to him while he's like drunk and naked, and Noah curses him. And I think part of the curse is, like, I'd have to look it up to like look at the exact words, but it's like part of the curse is that his descendants become slaves. And that story has been used to justify slavery. People literally believe that black people were literally cursed by, cursed by God or whatever to be black and to be enslaved.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So it's an actual thing. I mean, look at, I think the Mormons had something like that at one time. It's a layer of fucked up.
Let's just say that that's not endearing me to the Bible. Let's put it like that, because wow. Okay. Oof. Oh my God. That's a tough one to digest. A really tough one to digest. My goodness. Okay. Let's move on then a little bit. When did you start seeing? Actually, no. Give me a second. I would like to talk to you as a publisher and writer, because you have worked in some published role-playing games. Have you experienced any kind of different treatment from the industry, from the publishing side of the industry as a black person? Or do you feel that you've been treated roughly the same way as a white person?
I was underpaid just like everybody else. I don't believe I was treated differently, but again, the scope of the projects I was involved in were either like me writing a supplement for someone or me doing my own independent projects. So I don't have that deep insider industry knowledge that someone else might have.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you see, because we have agreed that things are better now than they used to be. Mm-hmm. Even Wizards of the Coast is doing some incredibly half-assed efforts to make things better, which is incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. But when did you see the first signs that things were actually starting to improve?
Well, I can't say a specific year or something like that, but I'd say within the past 5 to 10 years, and I'm being very vague about this on purpose. When it's like started to become part of the public discourse, and instead of being shouted down, it was spreading. Because it's like, because these conversations are not new. they're not new. They might be new to white people, but they're not new. But in the past, it was easy to bury those conversations. It's easy to shunt them to the side, easier to to silence people of color speaking out about stuff like this. But social media probably has a lot to do with it. For all the trash fire that Twitter and Instagram and Tumblr and even Facebook could be, it did allow, first of all, people of color to find one another and amplify each other's voices. Mm-hmm. And because of the very public nature of the discourse, you couldn't suppress it. And I think that made a big difference.
I wonder, I wonder if also there's been a matter of visibility in terms of black authors, because I bet my bottom dollar that unless they've been to a convention and met him face to face, or actually seeing a photograph in social networks, I bet you anything that 90% of people who've ever played Shadowrun had no idea that the author was black.
I didn't know. Okay. I didn't know. But so yeah. And there's also like black people becoming more prominent in like nerd culture. Like from N.K. Jemisin's Inheritance trilogy, or even doing things like casting people of color in like these like popular sci-fi fantasy shows like The Witcher, or you know, even Game of Thrones, but with all the shitty racial stuff that's in it, it's like they do have melanin. It's you know, they do have, you know, brown people. And so, and I guess like the sheer visibility, like you said, it's like, you know, people, it kind of, it opens the mind a little bit, a teeny bit, like the door used to be shut and bolted and, you know, soldered shut, but now it's like kind of like cracked a teeny bit. So yeah.
And I reckon, you know, I don't think many people realize of how important visibility is, you know, and I have a confession to making here. When I started the podcast, and we're going back 10 years, it's not that long, okay? And this is just to give you an idea as to how completely and utterly unaware I was at the time. And just out of, I've never thought about this. I interviewed Louis Porter Jr.
Okay.
And he was one of the few people who actually connected the camera. It used to be a Skype, you know, just a voice conversation. And when he turned the camera on, it was the first news I had that he was, well, he's black. And I remember thinking, oh, a black person is an RPG author. And I found myself thinking after the interview, you know, and don't get me wrong, I absolutely adore that man. He's hilarious, incredibly talented, and a very, very good writer and a good friend. And I just was left after that interview thinking, shit, how many more black people are there that I don't know anything about because I haven't given them a second thought, because I have just allowed myself to not care. I was thinking that it left me thinking that cannot be right. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I started to make an effort in finding out more about these sorts of situations. It was a very, very weird feeling. I don't know where I'm going with this. I just wanted to share this because I wonder how many people out there are in the same situation that I was at the time, and they have just never thought about it. You know, how have you found people who've told you similar things that they've told you have never really thought about it until you told me?
No, not really. I think part of that is like people want to act like they were born woke a lot of times, but like, not really. It's that kind of introspection I find is kind of rare. I think people don't want to be introspective or even at least bit self-critical. I mean, I get it to a certain extent because like a lot of us were shamed for our interests. So we kind of have a knee-jerk reaction to anything that even has the whiff of shaming us. But at the same time, you know, especially, you know, now that you're grown, you know, you're supposed to go to therapy for all that and, you know, have that, you know, figure out how to cope with that and work around that. But because you're still like a flawed human being and you still have blind spots and prejudices and things like that. And you still have things where you know, that way you don't care, where you don't know because you don't care, and you don't care because, you know, you're in a position where you don't have to. And, and you know, and it takes like some rare introspection in order to be like, okay, I can, okay, this, I need to improve about this. You know, so it's like, yeah, I appreciate it when people are introspective.
Well, I mean, in my kind of defense, I will say, because I come from a completely different cultural background, and I was at the time already living in the UK, where there is a much, much greater racial diversity than there is in Spain. I was becoming more accustomed. Let's just say that I had already had the epiphany that, you know, one can live surrounded by people of color, and it's normal and fine, and, you know, nothing changes. You know, the world goes on. And I found that when I went to the UK, because in my hometown, we had just literally one black person. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking a town of about, I don't know, at the time it must have been about 85,000 people. Mm-hmm. And we had just one person, mm-hmm. of color, who was a doctor. Mm-hmm. That was it. So I was... never thought about it. And when I went to the UK and I went to London, and I started to realize, oh. But I just never thought about it within the RPG authorship. Mm-hmm. You know, I never thought about it as the RPG artistry, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about it until I saw the first black character illustration in a Paizo book. Mm-hmm. I just never...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One moment, please. Mm-hmm. I don't even know who this is.
Somebody wanted to sell you insurance, I bet.
It might be, for all I know.
So, some companies have made some strides. You know, I was mentioning like Paizo, how... I think they were the first ones to make the cleric a black illustration. Mm-hmm. But they have never made a public point of, you know, we're doing this because we want to make this point. They just made it. Mm-hmm. How does it feel when you find a company, and there are plenty out there who do, you know, Abyss is one of them, Chaosium is another one that does the best they can, and I really like them for that. Mm-hmm. Cubicle 7 has done it in the past. How does it feel when you actually see a company that's making an effort in racial representation without making a point about it?
I think I shared the last time where it's like there were times when I've bought certain products simply by virtue of the fact that they included a black character without making a big deal about it, or having a culture represented by black people without making a big deal out of it. So that visibility does matter, and it's like, I mean, the marketing and whatnot, I don't really care. It's like, I get it. It's like, they're a company. They're there to make money. And right now, not catering to racists is going to make them more money. So to me, and this is just my personal thing, it's, I'm glad for every step forward. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, it's like, Could I do with a little less patting on the back? You know, yeah. But I'm not going to begrudge that or like shout, you know, begrudge that or like try to make that the focal point of any kind of critique I make of them. And I think being Jewish has a lot to do with that. And there's a whole other conversation we can have about what I mean by that. Especially when it comes to the puritanical streak in modern public discourse. It's like, because I'm not going to judge intentions. It's like, I know you're a company, you want more money, and you're realizing that being aligned with Nazis is not a good idea. But at the same time, you know, they do the thing. and that's all my thing. That's pretty much my approach to it, how I feel about it. It's like they're doing the thing. And they're doing the thing in a way that's not pissing me off, where it's like somebody wants to include a black character, so they use the most stereotypical representation of a black person to do that. It's like, look, as long as you're doing, like, treating, like, representing black people as people, I'm good. As long as you're not, you know, giving me this stereotype where it's like this gangster thug shit where, you know, the character raps all their words. Okay. You know, as long as you're not pissing me off with this blatantly stereotypical shit, I'm good. So, you know, do you, like, take what little steps you can, expand, you know, expand your knowledge, you know, however you can. It's just, yeah, I'm not gonna, like, emotionally invest in a company or even an individual being the same level of woke as me right off the bat. So, yeah.
Have you? What am I trying to ask in here? Let me see if I can formulate this question. What is it like for you when you see a company like Wizards of the Coast? You know, I would like to talk specifically about them because being the biggest, I believe they also have the biggest responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I know they're trying. How does that trying feel to you as a black person? Do you think that they're doing enough, or do you think that they're just playing lip service to the people so they can sell more, and in reality they care a lot less than they say they care?
Like, again, this is where the Jewish thing comes up for me. I don't care that they don't care. I know that's why they do it.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing is that they do it. Okay. And that they do it as well as they're able to. Like, for instance, a company like Wizards of the Coast has the resources to do well, you know, to put in the time and the effort and the energy to do the research and to not half-ass it. So, and I mean not half-ass it in the sense of, like, if you're going to create a setting based on West Africa, they have the ability to do that research. You know, it's not like this is one person in the basement, in their basement, trying to come up with this whole cloth with no access to any real information. So it's like, I look at what they do and I'll be like, well, that's either that meets my standards or it doesn't. And it's like, and it's never enough, really. It's like they're 30 years behind.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting out 30 years behind. And so it's like, okay, fine. It's just like, okay. And then there's also better late than never. I just try to keep those things in perspective, because if I start second guessing everything or wondering what's in their heart of hearts, do they really care about black people? I'm bound to get myself very disappointed. and it's like, they're just setting me up to be upset.
Yeah, I'm going to throw something out there, which I know this is likely to upset a number of people. And I don't say this just about Wizards of the Coast, okay? I say this in general. But I'm going to say that unless companies are actually prepared to hire in whatever capacity, whether it is some staff member or freelancers, people of color, they are never really going to make the necessary strides to create truly egalitarian and inclusive games. Right. I get the feeling that, I'm sorry, you can pay a white folk to do research on West Africa, but even that research is not going to have the same gravitas, the same body solidity, I don't know what word I'm looking for, credibility, than the same research that a Black person is going to do, because the Black person, I reckon, is going to be a lot more invested in it. How far am I from this?
I think that's true. I think you're absolutely right that hiring Black talent is key to advancing advancing representation of Black people in RPGs. Of course, not just hiring Black talent, but actually like investing in Black talent. You know, mentoring Black talent. What else? Because, you know, it's like there's a phenomenon where it's like we hire people of color and then it's like, but the corporate culture is hostile to them. So they quit or they get fired. So,
well, which we have seen that happening with Orion Black recently when when they left Wizards of the Coast, and it was quite a scandalous situation because what Orion was talking about was jarring. I mean, that was really harrowing to hear the experience they had. So it I get the feeling again that some companies try to invest in that talent, but as soon as the talent says, hey, this is problematic and it needs to change, the effort to change becomes insurmountable, and it's easier to silence the voice than to, you know, create the change.
Right. And that's to me like a funny space to be in. And I'm just going to be honest, it's always a funny space to be in. Because like you having the kind of push and pull where it's like, yes, the ideal would be to have visible representation in the product as well as, representation present behind the scenes. RPG products created like by Black people for a general audience that overtly includes Black people is, you know, that's the kind of the holy grail, I guess. But in the real world, it's like, great. But in the real world, a lot of times you have to, it's not that simple. It's like, okay, what do you do with the product that, you know, what do you do with the company that puts out a product that says, here, you're welcome at, you know, you're welcome in this industry or you're welcome in this game, but behind the scenes treats their Black employees like shit, or treats their female employees like shit, treats their, you know, queer employees like shit. Like, and you can holler boycott till you're blue in the face. That ain't gonna happen. So, and then if it did happen, what the lesson they take from it is not treat these people better, but don't hire them at all. And so it's like, oh God, what do I do with this? Or then you have another situation where the product itself is more, seems like more of the same, but behind the scenes, it's like, okay, well, they have, you know, it's like, wow, there are a lot of women, there are a lot of people of color, and everybody's saying, and there are a lot of queer people, and they're all saying they love working there. Even though it's the same box standard medieval European fantasy shit. You know, what do you do in that situation? Because then that's not even touching on independent creators. And this is where I am going to talk about independent creators. If you want to spend your money knowing that you're actually improving things and making things better, yes, support independent role-playing games. People of color are making role-playing games. Okay, Black people are making role-playing games. They're not getting the visibility, you know, because everything's dominated by the, you know, the big behemoths of the industry. But like, you know, follow some people of color in the TTRPG community. And not only that, but support their Kickstarter projects. It's like, you don't necessarily have to buy the whole product. I mean, just your like little 50 cent change can go toward, you know, a Kickstarter project, any kind of crowdfunding thing, or even just supporting a Patreon or whatever. Like, and I really have to emphasize this, support independent role-playing games. And even if the independent game itself is not created by and for people of color, because they're smaller, you have more access to them. You can make the changes you can make are a lot more profound because they're smaller, and they can be nimble and change direction much more quickly without having to completely overhaul a corporate culture.
Absolutely. I mean, $20 given to a small one-person endeavor is going to be way, way bigger than giving $20 to Chaosium or Wizards of the Coast.
Right.
A lot bigger. So even though those companies do support more people, but at the end of the day, the impact on that one person is going to be much, much greater. So yes, I go with it. Now, however, I need to put you on the spotlight a little bit in here, and you may not have the answer to this question, but do you feel in general the Black community is supportive of the Black community of authors and illustrators and general creators around the industry?
I'm going to tread very carefully here. I do not have access to details about that information.
Okay.
I do think that Black people in nerd culture are becoming more openly accepted. Like I keep saying, like with queer people, it's like, we've always been here. You just didn't notice us.
Exactly.
Or we've always been here. You just weren't paying attention. Or we've always been here, but you kept telling us to shut up. So, like, there have always been Black nerds. There have always been Black people into fantasy, sci-fi, horror, and all that. And like I mentioned, it's like, there is, especially back in, like, the 80s and 90s, there were the gatekeeping was a lot stronger. Mm. You know, there was, like, more hurdles to people in groups finding each other. But I have noticed that when I talk about playing RPGs among other, you know, when I'm among other Black people and I'm talking about playing RPGs, they actually know what I'm talking about. They might think it's D&D, but they know what I'm talking about.
Mm.
As opposed to, I think, when I was in my teens and 20s, it's like, you know, like, what in the world is that? So, you know, make of that what you will. It's like, when I talk with other Black people, they know what the hell I mean when I say I role play. Well, yeah, that's something.
On that vein, and to start wrapping it up, because we've been at it for nearly an hour now, on that vein, what would you expect or want from the Black community that plays role-playing games? What would you want from that community?
Oh, wow. I
know that's a very big question.
Probably a whole other episode. But keep pushing. Like, keep more content. I think if I had to nail it down to one thing, more content. And I mean, like, that thing you might have on your hard drive that's just like, oh, it's not much, I'm just going to do this. Fucking finish that and publish that shit. It's like, yes, I care because I have my own personal taste of what I want to explore, but I want more Black role players putting out content. It can be a supplement, it can be a game, it can be drawings, you know, whatever. Just more content. It's you know, I think first of all, it's like nobody can represent us better than we can.
Mm.
So, you know, you're doing nobody any favors by keeping that shit on your hard drive. And it's like, yes, give it your best effort. You know, don't be lazy about it. And I'm not saying y'all are lazy because you're black and nothing like that. It's just, I understand that it takes effort to like put this stuff out there because you need to finish it. You need to revise it. It's like, I know it's a whole process and it takes a while, but do it. Put it out there. Get it in front of people. Play test it. Do what you have to do to make more about us for us. So
that's an interesting one, because it begs the question, and again, this is going to be a very big question. Mm-hmm. Why don't they?
Yeah. You'd have to ask them, but I think there's that internalized stuff, you know. I think there's a lot of internalized baggage where, you know, people might be thinking, well, I can't write a D&D, so I may as well not even try, or I can't do I'm just me, and it'd just be like, I only have the rules are so light, I don't know what to do with this. I can barely make a zine out of this, you know, and don't even try. Or, you know, it's like, I guess it's just some kind of insecurity about, like, what we've been taught we were capable of. And I'm like, trust me, if Trump could be president, you can put that game out. You can put out that supplement. You can do that fan supplement. You can do that, you know, put out your little portfolio of artwork, just, or your concept art. Yeah, concept art would be awesome. But just put the content out there. It's like, and I know it can be scary. You don't want people to give you shit about it. Or it's your baby and you can barely take any criticism about anything at all. It's just put it out there. And you know, it's like, and I think, to answer your question more directly, I think, you know, just playing on insecurity most of the time. And the other time, unfortunately, is resources. Like, the reach of your average black gamer is not anywhere near, you know, say a Critical Role. You know, and it's like, yes, there are black gamers who are doing something similar and doing something like very firmly rooted in their own culture, which is why I like want to point to the Motherlands RPG. If you're not watching it, if you're not subscribed to it, and you want, you know, all that, you know, black oriented role playing games, there you go. But, you know, yeah, there's also the structural factors of resources and reach and whatnot. But the answer to that is not to do less. It's to keep pushing forward and to keep doing more and, you know, make yourself heard. And if they're not here, you make yourself heard. And if they're like not opening the door, knock that bitch down. I mean, it's just, I think, you know, just get ballsy like white dudes. That's it. Be ballsy like them. And, you know, what are they going to do? Yeah.
I just wonder, and again, maybe I'm reaching here, but I just wonder how many times people think about doing it.
Yeah.
And they contemplate or imagine the hurdles that they're going to have to put up with, you know, from white people, mm-hmm. that they run out of spoons immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I wonder how much the notion that they're going to be vilified, criticized for putting black content out there, for mm-hmm. wanting to be like, you know, what white folk are doing and wanted to do exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they contemplate that notion and think, oh my God, I have enough shit in my life already. I don't want to put up with this kind of white shit anymore.
Yeah, and you know, that's valid. But I'm saying, do the shit anyway. Like, look, I have my days too, where it's just like, is this even worth it? It trust me, I'm not speaking as someone who's never struggled with it. You know, come on. But it's like if you have it, if you're working on it, finish it up and put it out. they'll come, you might get some trolls, you'll block their asses and keep it moving.
And you know what? There will be some people out there. Well, we are going to listen and we're going to take a look at it. And we are going to support because that's the right thing to do. You know, so yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see that happening more often, really. A lot more often. But anyway, this has been incredibly enlightening. And I reckon, I think we will probably come back to this, this topic at some point, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Because we're probably just scratching the surface.
And
I bet that as this podcast, you know, evolves and you and I get to talk to each other more often, you know, because let's make no mistake, having this conversation is very difficult. Mm-hmm. I reckon for both of us, because we don't know each other very well, do we? I mean, we talk like very familiar, but we don't know each other yet very well. And it's, I mean, I feel very intimidated talking about these things because I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to fuck it up.
Right.
It's hard.
Right. And it's like, contrary to what people think, just because I'm candid here does not mean that these conversations are easy for me. And I think a lot of white people in general, like, well, they're always talking about it, so it must not be hard. It's like, no, it's always hard talking about it. Because every time I open my mouth, I'm taking a chance. You know, because I've had it go badly when I spoke up. I've had it go badly when I even tiptoe with it. I've lost friends over it. And I don't mean them using the N-word in front of me either. I mean, even so much as saying, you know, this thing you said is kind of racially insensitive, or this dynamic I know is, this dynamic I'm witnessing is kind of messed up. And, you know, being dismissed by somebody, you know, right offhand and stuff. It's like, that shit does get to you.
Mm.
I mean, it gets to you being treated like you're crazy. You know, it gets to you being treated like you're dumb. And yeah.
Well, I can only thank you very, very, very much and very sincerely for this, because it's been very, very enlightening, and it's been very hard to listen at some points, and it's very some very hard things to hear, but. I hope that people are getting something out of this, and whoever has listened to this episode and the previous one will hopefully stop to think for 5 minutes. Just that would be quite something, yeah. Really. So thank you.
Yeah, and please, if you have questions, given the format of this of these talks, it's like I feel more comfortable addressing them in this way, like between me, between you and I. And like some third person has a code, like send in the Q&A or whatever. It's just, you know, I'm just not going to debate my shit. If you have a genuine question and you're like something that you're trying to understand or whatever, I'm generally pretty patient about that. It's the people who try to argue with me like I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. That's when I get mad.
Understandably. I don't blame you there.
Yeah, but a genuine question, please, like let me know. And maybe like, yo, your question could actually be like the focal point of one of our episodes. So
yes,
yeah.
That'd be cool. So there you go, listeners. Please do email us podcast@gmsmagazine.com or find us at Twitter or Facebook and anywhere. You know, we are all over the place. So just say hi and reach out, please. It would be truly, truly cool to keep this conversation going and you know, help people understand what it's like to not be them. Mm-hmm. You know, as in not be white, basically. So thank you for listening, and thank you for being there, and thank you, Sean, seriously. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.